Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Let us begin at the beginning, shall we? As the coronavirus continues to haunt the entire planet, killing as it goes and wiping out businesses internationally and indiscriminately without a thought for the human race that it is attacking, there are many voices out there criticising what the government did, when it did it, why it did it, and asking if the measures taken were right, disproportionate, or just plain wrong. What I can tell you is this. On January the 14th of this year, the World Health Organization issued this tweet. Preliminary investigations conducted by the Chinese authorities have found no clear evidence of human-to-human transmission of the novel coronavirus identified in Wuhan. So there you have it. Is it any wonder that dozens of countries around the world did not react more quickly to this deadly threat? The very people that are supposed to safeguard our health and prevent dangerous viruses from spreading globally were actually absent and missing in action. And isn't it time we started admitting that the World Health Organization is simply not fit for purpose, not fit for this century, and not honest enough to call out China for its hideous practices when it comes to food and hygiene? And it gets worse, by the way, because only yesterday the Australian Prime Minister was critical of the World Health Organization because they basically said to China, go ahead and reopen your wet markets, just keep them clean. Donald Trump wants to withdraw funding from this ghastly, craven organisation, which is in the thrall of the Chinese Communist Party, and we should do the same. Once again, the President of the United States has absolutely got it right. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we'll get the latest from the front line in the fight against COVID-19, and we'll speak to Tory MP Matt Vickers on the government's strategy to lift the lockdown at some point in the future. Most of all, of course, we want to hear from you too. Your experiences, your stories, your opinions, and what you're seeing and hearing out there. You are the eyes and ears of the home of common sense right here on the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio. You know the number, 0344 499 1000. In our homeschool section today, we're going to go back to basics in the kitchen and we're going to learn how to poach an egg with professional chef Barry Vera. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
And as ever, ladies and gentlemen, we will be live streaming on YouTube, on Facebook and on Twitter. So get on that. There are growing numbers. The numbers are absolutely immense right now on our YouTube channel. So thank you to everybody who's a new listener and a new viewer. Because, of course, as many people have found during the lockdown, you need things to do. You need things to watch. You need things to listen to. And what better way to spend the morning than by listening to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Let's talk to our good friend Christopher Snowden, Head of Lifestyle Economics at the IEA. Christopher, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
I think it's time, and I'm quite surprised at myself, and I sort of gave myself a verbal slapping this morning, that we haven't had a go at the World Health Organization yet. You know, all these journalists are out there busy having a go at the government, asking them why they didn't do this, why they didn't do that. You know, I've been checking back through the tweets and the advice from the WHO, and quite frankly, if they got it any more wrong, you know, they should all be in prison.
Yeah, they've mishandled it terribly. And to be fair, Donald Trump has mishandled it terribly. Mm. And in January and February, neither the WHO nor Trump, you know, displayed much competence whatsoever. And I think we can be honest about it and say that, you know, Trump's motivations for pulling this funding is, you know, not entirely pure. He's not motivated purely by a desire to clean up an international agency. He just wanted to deflect attention from...
That may be true, but let's face it, if you're the President of the United States, or indeed the Prime Minister of Great Britain, or indeed the Prime Minister of any other country, the government of any other country, you're going to be guided by the science. That's what we keep hearing. And if the World Health Organization says, for example, in January, that it doesn't pass from human to human, you're going to think, OK, well, let's not get carried away here. Let's not think that we're all going to go to hell in a handcar. And then after that, they then issue another ridiculous statement in which they basically say that, you know, there's no need to overreact to this situation. And it really is time. There is no reason for measures that unnecessarily interfere with international travel and trade. We call on all countries to implement decisions that are evidence-based and consistent. The World Health Organization stands ready to provide advice to any country that is considering which measures to take. That message timed at 7:48 p.m. January the 30th. So we're already at the end of January, and they're still saying, effectively, no need to lock anything down.
Yeah, and they continued saying that for some time. And one of the few things Trump did get right in January, February, was introducing the travel ban on people flying in from China and Europe. And the WHO criticised that, said it would create fear and stigma.
Yeah.
They seem obsessed with preventing any kind of fear and stigma, mainly, presumably, towards Chinese people. I'm not sure that was ever a credible problem in the first place. So the only thing Trump got right, the WHO criticised. And the important thing to remember is this is not a sort of one-off failure by the WHO. Most people don't pay a lot of attention to these kind of organisations in normal times. I do. I've been following them for years. I've watched how they behave, their unaccountability, kicking journalists out of conferences, putting out anonymous briefings, highly political material. Yeah. They're obsessed with political correctness. They're obsessed with nanny states trivia, frankly. They need to get back to focusing on their core mission, which is tackling and eradicating infectious diseases.
Exactly.
And unfortunately, over the last 15 years or so, they've become very distracted by the obsessions of public health campaigners in the West, while millions of people continue to die of contagious and tropical diseases in developing countries.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, it seems to me that the World Health Organization is a sort of medical equivalent of FIFA. How exactly is it put together, and how exactly is it run? Because it's a kind of secret organization to me as well.
Well, yeah, it is, but it's not very transparent, and it is unaccountable. It has various different divisions, and I think a lot of those need stripping away because, as I say, it needs to be focused entirely on infectious diseases. And countries give it various, you know, hugely varying amounts of money, and the USA is by far its biggest funder. Actually, on a per capita basis, Britain's its biggest funder.
Yeah.
We're its second biggest, you know, member state funder. And a lot of countries contribute hardly anything. And if you combine the contributions of France, Spain, Italy, Finland and Ireland, you get less than 5% of what the USA puts in. So all these people complaining today about what Trump's doing are free riders. And we should remind them that WHO is more than happy to accept donations. If people want to dip their hands in their pocket, they can help make up some of the shortfall. But there's no reason why the USA should be carrying the rest of the world on this. And also, finally, there is actually a more targeted agenda here than a lot of people realize.
Yeah.
It hasn't got much media attention, but a few days ago, the U.S. House of Congress wrote a letter to the WHO demanding, essentially it was a freedom of information request. They were demanding to see correspondence between WHO and China and various other bodies.
Right.
And I think that what Trump's done yesterday is to give that a bit of impetus, make sure that the WHO responds. I think probably in the long run, the WHO will get its money from America. But you've got to have a little bit of gunboat diplomacy in these things, because the WHO will simply not change unless it sees the money drying up.
It's incredible, isn't it? And as far as the way it's constituted, I mean, where is it based? Who's in charge of it? You know, how does it pick its kind of officers? Are they health-driven or are they diplomat-driven? And how much money are they all making? Because I can imagine that there's many people in the WHO on six-figure salaries.
Yeah, well, it's highly political. The current Director General is Dr. Tedros, who's from Ethiopia. He's the first African Director General. And when he took over from Margaret Chan, who was really dreadful, there was some hope that because he was from Africa, the WHO would return to looking and concentrating on infectious diseases in Africa and developing countries, but that really hasn't happened. And he's shown the same kind of obsession with vaping and drinking and sugary drinks as his predecessor did. It's based in Geneva, like a lot of these organisations. It's part of the United Nations.
Yeah, exactly. And the United Nations is already in very much the thrall of China, very much in the debt of the United States of America. And in previous times, other presidents other than Donald Trump have refused to give them money. I think it was George Bush, I think, that said he was going to withhold funding to the UN. So it's this kind of this cartel of kind of, you know, uselessness that goes on. The United Nations completely useless in stopping wars. The United Nations completely hopeless when it comes to, you know, worldwide pandemics, completely useless when it comes to international refugee crises. You know, how much longer are we going to have to put up with these ridiculously overburdened bodies who have got too many people working for them, who don't even pay their parking tickets because they think they're diplomats, who can get away with raping women in New York City and not being prosecuted for it? I mean, I'm really getting fed up with these people.
Yeah, and the UN special rapporteurs who come over to Britain every now and again.
Oh, yeah, and tell us that we're a third...
one of the poorest countries in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm literally sick to death of these bozos.
Yeah, and this is why I think that reform in practice is probably pretty unlikely, even if there was a will to do it. I think, unfortunately, you've got to kind of start again with some of these organisations. They all start off with the best of intentions, and the WHO has done some fantastic work over the years. And we should be very clear about that, you know, eradicating smallpox and so on. But it seems to be the case with these kind of institutions that partly because they lack democracy and transparency, they just become more and more political and move further and further away from their original agenda. I see no real reason, once this is all over, why a kind of rival organization to the WHO couldn't be set up. If America starts putting money into something, you know, something fresh and new that's focusing entirely on infectious diseases, and other countries start putting money in there, WHO can carry on going on about, you know, what are the correct words to use for different flus and complaining about people vaping, while this other organisation can get on with saving lives.
Yeah, exactly right. So as far as the Trump promise to not give them any money, I mean, presumably if he stops giving them money, they will continue for a while. But what will they actually do?
Well, they would continue doing, you know, what they're doing at the moment, which is handling the occasional pandemic rather badly and spending a huge amount of time complaining about what they call non-communicable diseases and, you know, campaigning for sugar taxes and, you know, advertising bans on vaping, or indeed total bans on vaping.
Yeah.
It's a nanny state stuff. It's the reason I've been following so much over the last 10 years, and they're obsessed with it in a different way as I am.
Yes. Aren't they the same guys that have come up with this ludicrous figure of 40,000 people dying every year from pollution in London?
Yeah, I think that was them. I'm not 100% sure, but I would think so. One of the issues with the WHO when it comes to research is that so much of it's anonymous. You know, when I talk about lack of transparency, it goes right all the way up to the research documents.
Yeah.
You don't even know really who's working for them or who's writing their material.
Yeah, it's really quite extraordinary, isn't it? That you know, one of the things that I think will be good and may come out of this coronavirus and nonsense and ghastliness is that we've learned an awful lot more about an awful lot of organisations, an awful lot of people, an awful lot of politicians, and the way that the world actually works that we kind of never thought about before. But because we've now got the time to look at everything, we're actually beginning to realise there's quite a lot of things wrong with the way the world works.
Yes, it is a sort of silver lining, if you like. I've been trying for several years to get people interested in WHO because I do think it's very similar to FIFA, actually.
Yes.
And it took a long time for the truth to come out about FIFA.
Mm.
And if you want to use a sort of footballing analogy, you know, when all that stuff came out about FIFA a few years ago, and it was beyond dispute that Russia and Qatar had basically stolen those World Cups, there was a window of time in which if the Premier League and La Liga had refused to let their players out, if Brazil and Argentina had said, we're not going to go to these World Cups, then the whole thing would have fallen apart.
Right.
And FIFA would have been replaced by a new and clean agency that could put on the same events just as well, but without the corruption.
Yes.
That window of opportunity was not grasped. And that's why I think, although people are complaining about Donald Trump doing it now and saying it's the worst possible time in the middle of the pandemic, and so on, the reality is this pandemic will eventually end.
Yes.
And people will go back to ignoring organisations.
Yeah,
like
and also, if the World Health Organization ceased to exist right now at 10:19:05 on Wednesday, April the 15th, would anybody actually notice? I don't know what they do. It's not like they're stopping the coronavirus from spreading. It's not like they're giving aid and succour to any particular country. You know, they're just talking.
Well, to be fair, in Africa and some of the poor countries, they are actually doing some frontline work. And it's a poor countries like that that do need the help of the WHO and do need, you know, foreign aid and so on. The question is whether the WHO is best placed to do that, whether the amount of money that we give them is being properly used, and we can get more bang for a buck if it was somebody else doing it.
Yeah, but I mean, perversely, some of the countries that are going to end up being worst hit are those very countries, because you've probably seen as same as I have, places like India, where there's millions of poor people, places in Africa, where there's millions of poor people who are not just living very close to each other, but who are also quite suspicious of any kind of, you know, officialdom, and who are not willing to do the social distancing that we're all doing. You know, they are going to be wiped out if they continue to operate like that. And so what the hell is the World Health Organization doing for them?
It's a huge worry, obviously, that this disease is just going to go through places like India and Asia, like a dose of salt.
Right.
Touch wood, it hasn't happened yet, actually, and it's been remarkable how slow the progress of the disease has been in these areas, and we can only hope that it continues for whatever reason.
Absolutely. Christopher, thank you very much indeed. Christopher Snowden there, Head of Lifestyle Economics at the Institute of Economic Affairs. I'm sick to death of the World Health Organization. I don't think they do anything that is worth a fag end. If somebody could tell me that what they do is of any use to man or beast, then I'd be more than happy to hear from you. But as far as I can see, it is just another quango. It is just another world global organization fitted up by those planks at the United Nations, who are also useless and who do nothing for the good of the common man and the common woman in this world. I think we should stop funding them right now. I think Donald Trump is entirely correct. And I also think that the US Attorney's Office should do exactly what they did with FIFA and start investigating these criminals at the World Health Organization and start arresting them in Switzerland or wherever the hell they hang out and start locking them up, because they are a bigger danger than the coronavirus. This is Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Here on Talk Radio, we have teamed up with the Malta Tourism Authority to say thank you to our NHS heroes, to all those working tirelessly on the front line, risking their own safety to ensure that they can provide the best possible care to everyone in need. We want to reward them when the time is right with an incredible trip for two to the stunning Maltese Islands. We need you to nominate your NHS hero, and one lucky winner will be able to take up their well-deserved rest with a luxurious three-night break to Malta. There they can enjoy the crystal-clear waters, explore the historical sites, and discover the island's culture. So if you know a National Health Service doctor, nurse, healthcare worker or support staff who are doing amazing work at this time, we really do want to hear it. Head online to the Talk Radio competitions page at talkradio.co.uk/competitions and get your nominations in now. What better way to say thank you to the wonderful people who work in the NHS? And I don't just mean the doctors and the nurses. Think about the cleaners. Think about the admin staff. Think about the people who do all the filing. Think about all the people who are at reception. I walk past Guy's Hospital here every single day as I come to work, and I see the cancer centre there, and there are people standing at the door making sure that the poor people who are having to go in to be treated for cancer or to be seen by doctors are standing far enough away from one another. You know, and there are so many people, ambulance drivers, drivers of private ambulances, even cab drivers who are bringing people to and from hospital. All of these people, I think, have to be recognised. And no doubt we will recognise them again on Thursday night. But let's not just think about the frontline doctors and nurses. There's an awful lot of other people involved as well. Let's talk now, though, to Professor Carol Sikora, a good friend of the show, former chief of the cancer programme at the World Health Organisation and Dean of Medicine at the University of Buckingham. Carol, very good morning to you.
And to you, Mike.
I've been on a bit of a rant this morning, I have to confess, about the World Health Organization, because I'm sick to death of reading some of the tweets that they sent out early part of this year, in which not only did they say that they were satisfied that the COVID-19 virus would not be spread human to human, but that they also said and recommended that governments did not take any rash actions as late as January the 30th.
I know. I worked for the WHO. I ran the cancer program there for a couple of years on secondment.
Right.
This is about 15 years ago.
What can you tell us about them?
It's a mighty bureaucracy.
Yeah.
And It's very political. It's very diplomatic. You get CD number plates. I could park on double yellow when I got home.
Well, this is what used to annoy me about the UN. When I lived in New York, right, the UN had an out-running sort of bill, technically speaking, of millions and millions of dollars because they just didn't ever bother to pay their parking fees. And they didn't pay their speeding tickets. And there was one case where a guy was accused of rape. And he was allowed to disappear from the country with diplomatic immunity, despite the fact that he had committed a serious criminal offence.
Oh, I got a great thrill. I got a speeding ticket in Geneva with a note saying, "We notice your CD plates and therefore we are warning you, please do not do this. Please do
That's
not.
Nice.
Very, very polite in French.
Yes.
Not very nice.
I mean, I've decided they are the FIFA of the medical world, which I think is entirely accurate.
No, the problem with the WHO is it does a lot of good work, and that's the thing. There's a lot of good people in it, and the management's a bit top-heavy. It's very bureaucratic. Mm. Every letter I used to write was translated into six languages.
Right.
Why those languages were chosen, I don't know. They were the common languages of the world.
Right.
But more importantly, you know, for cancer, which is my specialty, you have to have money to do get radiotherapy, chemotherapy, all the things. And if you have no money, like you're in sub-Saharan Africa, the WHO really can't help you much. It can help prioritize. Now, I always thought it was fantastic on infection, smallpox, yellow fever, Ebola, Lassa fever. These are the big infections, TB, HIV. But it really, this time it has let us down. But this is not the time for Trump to say, "I'm not paying my subs." And it's 400 million, the biggest single contributor to the WHO funds. Let's get out of this and then have an analysis. Let's keep the WHO. Fire all the management if necessary, but let's keep it as an organisation.
Well, as I said earlier, you know, we all saw how the FIFA thing ended up. We basically had the US Attorney's Office in New York investigating it, and they found in the end that there was quite a lot of corruption at the heart of FIFA, and they actually had a lot of people arrested, and some of them went on trial. So maybe that's the route we have to go down in order to sort of clean it out root and branch.
I think so. And what amazed me, every country has a WHO representative.
Yeah.
And if you go to poor countries, the salary they get is a Geneva-based salary. So it's like 10 times what you'd get in Sierra Leone, for example.
Right.
And yet it's the brother-in-law, the Minister of Health or something.
Yes.
Why have you got this job?
Yeah, right. It's absolutely disgraceful, isn't it?
It's nepotism.
Yes. Let's talk about today's developments. I see that you've tweeted out about the antibody kits.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
So the antibody test is complicated. There are kits available. The kits actually work. What we showed yesterday were the kits do work, but the timing is critical. You make the antibody response about 4 weeks after you recover from the virus. And, you know, a lot of people have had no symptoms, yet they've had the infection. So we're doing all our stuff. We run a series of four cancer centers with radiotherapy, chemotherapy, and proton therapy. And what I'm doing is getting all the staff tested with their consent. Yesterday, we tested the samples in a lab in London, and now we're just using the kits. We validated the kits, which is great. In other words, the kits work. And they're cheap, they're easy to use, you get the result in 15 minutes. The problem is, they're not quite simple enough for self-administration. The idea you can order one for £5 from Amazon, nice idea, but you easily make mistakes in opening it, reading it, putting the buffer in. You know, a health professional would have no trouble. Once you've done one or two, you can do as many as you like.
Right.
But I think it really is going to have to be done with some sort of health professional doing it with you. Healthcare assistant would be fine. Train healthcare assistant to read it and then photograph it, because nice mobile phone photographs everything. Mm. And then you've got a valid test.
Right. Now, we seem to be talking at the moment, looking at Spain and looking at Austria, looking at Denmark, perhaps specifically, that in those countries they're seeing a falling off of the numbers, that their numbers are finally going down on a daily basis in terms of deaths and in terms of infections. And looking at the government briefing yesterday, we seem to be travelling in that same direction, only slightly behind.
Exactly. We're 2 weeks behind.
Yeah.
And it's the natural flow of a pandemic through a country. We're 2 weeks behind the countries that yesterday morning came out of total lockdown.
Yeah.
Their lockdown was more rigid than ours, though. I mean, you know, I was in the lab in Neasden driving around the North Circular. It was traffic jam.
I know. Well, I can't believe that, you know, when I said this as I was driving in on Friday, Good Friday, it was very quiet on the roads, as it was on Easter Monday. I said, if all these workers are so essential, why are they not working bank holiday? Because it all came back to traffic jams again yesterday.
Yeah, I was totally taken aback, but never mind.
Yeah. But so, as far as their kind of sort of way out of the problem is concerned, in terms of the spread again of it making itself available, I suppose. I mean, how do they know that if they start as they start to lift the restrictions, that there won't be suddenly another sort of surge? If you know what I mean.
So they'll monitor for it very closely, and that's the information we can use. So if we're 2 weeks behind them, that puts us roughly 27th of April. That's the time to be looking at it. Now, our government's been very cautious. The statements from the committee. The committee meets today and tomorrow. This is a scientific advisory group on emergencies called SAGE, and they will be meeting now, maybe, and they won't want to give false hope. This is how governments behave. And so they're going to say, we'll see what the figures look like next week and make a decision next week. And maybe Boris will come back next week and announce that we can start liberating them. It won't be a fast liberating.
Yeah.
There won't be dancing in the streets, the lights in Piccadilly going on, you know, like the end of the war, D-Day. I'm not D-Day, V-Day. It won't be like that.
We won't be kissing strangers in the street, will we?
Still keep the social distancing. Let's open small shops, garden centres, shops with less than 50 people working in them. And we kept the supermarkets open. And amazing, the food deliveries. I mean, you know, amazing, the food chain has not... I know people grumble, and all these pictures of people buying toilet rolls, but the food chain has not let us down.
It really hasn't. I mean, I was in my local sort of small supermarket the other day, and they had plenty of toilet roll. You know, things are starting to come back. There are still strangely things missing, like it's still quite hard to get pasta, bizarrely.
And well, I love baked beans. I couldn't get any this week. And
really?
All I got was tins with sausages in. I don't want that. I want a proper tin of beans.
You know? Okay, all right. Well, we'll see what we can do. And as far as some other interesting things that have happened, South Korea, for example, we're being told that some people who they thought had tested positive for coronavirus and then spent the relative period to let it get away, they seem to be testing positive a second time. But they're suggesting that it might be their testing process that's messed up.
Yes. I mean, there are two types of tests. Everyone gets confused, including the politicians. One is for the virus, and that's a genetic test for the viral RNA. That's the code of life for the virus.
Yeah.
That's one thing. And it can be done from a nose swab or from the back of the throat. And the pictures in Chessington of the NHS staff being tested, that's what they're having done. The second is a finger prick test with a kit to look for antibody. And the antigen test, as it's called, the testing for the virus, is complex, it's expensive, has to be done in a lab. And you don't get the result for 24 to 48 hours. So it's cumbersome. Mm. We need something quick and dirty.
Right.
And what in Korea, they've been using both, both the antigen and the antibody test. So they've got a huge amount of information. And it's all available. It's all published in journals now. We can read it.
Mm.
Koreans are much more disciplined, I guess, than we are.
And, yes.
They've got a health service that's not working at full capacity, unlike the NHS, as it was before we started.
So, no.
They're able to have a bit more of a leisurely pace to it. They've dealt with it really well, and they're over. If you look at the figures, it's over. What happens, of course, in these countries, you get migrant workers that come home, and they bring the disease back. So you still get new cases, but they're not in the indigenous population.
Mm.
They're workers coming home, as in Singapore, as in China. There's a land border with Russia, and the people are just walking across it, coming back, and they're infected. And so the Chinese cases go up a bit. But on the whole, China's okay now.
Yes.
Everyone's nervous.
Well, we're told that they're okay, but trouble is we don't believe a word that China says. I mean, the only people that believe what China says appear to be the World Health Organization, I'm afraid. But Professor Carol Sakura, thank you very much indeed, former chief of the cancer program at the World Health Organization. I think he's going along with me, basically, in saying, look, there are some good things that they do. I don't think that ameliorates the bad things that they do, and they are definitely the FIFA of the medical world. This is Talk Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham, Talk Radio.
Now, as we know, we've become very used to things that you would have never been able to convince me that we would have been used to before. Like on Sunday, for example, I'm sitting in my apartment looking at the beautiful sunshine streaming in through the window and not going outside. I'm coming to work in the car rather than on public transport in order to safeguard my own health. I'm leaving work and going straight home, not going to the pub because the pub isn't open. I'm not going out for dinner anymore because there are no more restaurants. And, you know, life has become a very different thing. Let's talk to Matt Vickers now, who's been on with us several times before, and find out how he's dealing with it all. Matt, very good afternoon to you.
Hi, Mike. How's it going?
Yeah, very well. I mean, the one thing that I constantly say to people is how surprised I am, in a way, that we have sort of changed our way of life and we have accepted very much what it is that we have to do. And by and large, as a country, you know, we're running things very differently, and it's okay.
I think it's surprising how quickly people have changed their way of life completely and utterly. And I think for all the negative that we see on the news, all the bad stories, the amazing, well, one of the positives out of the entire thing is that people are at home with their families in a world that's usually a rush and they never have the time. Actually, they're getting the time with the kids in the garden. They're getting the time to take up that hobby that they've never got around to, and that book off the shelf that they're now reading. You know, there are positives in it.
Yes.
We just got to keep looking at the positives.
I mean, it's been a remarkable sort of 6 months for you, isn't it? Because, you know, 6 months ago, you weren't an MP, then you suddenly got elected in December, and then you suddenly joined the first new parliament of the year, and then suddenly everything got shut down.
Yeah, I think we'd go back to the Brexit debate now any day, wouldn't we? We'd prefer that to this,
yes.
I think. We're all sick of watching the news and hearing about Brexit, and now we're sick of hearing about coronavirus.
Yeah, exactly right. How is it? I presume you're in your constituency now at the moment, because obviously...
I am. The volume of emails is absolutely huge. People have got questions about all sorts of things. And I mean, the big important question, the people who are trying to run businesses and get through a crisis that means they can't go to work, or they can't work as they've always worked, and they're dealing with their suppliers not open, and they're, you know, all of that. It's huge. And there's so many different variations of how people run businesses, the field that they're in, and how you make all of that stack up. And I think actually... the response from the government has been impressive. The speed at which they've delivered the packages they have, it was impressive. You are never going to be able to solve everybody's problems overnight, but I think they've made a very good fist of it in the first instance.
Yes, no, I agree with that. And genuinely, I've said that all along, because the speed at which the civil service normally operates at has literally been turbocharged to the point where we've done more in the last 2 months than normally would happen in 2 years, you know?
Yeah. I think government's response has been amazing. The community response has been absolutely amazing. During this crisis, we have seen the worst of people and we've seen the very best of people. We just heard the story there about someone coughing and spitting at police officers. We've seen about people stockpiling. We've heard about these absolute scumbags who were taking the opportunity to scam old people with online messages and text messages and all that kabuff. We've seen the very worst of a small minority of people. We've actually seen the best of the rest of society who's jumped into action, doing its bit.
Yes.
In my part of the world, well, this morning we've been down packing food parcels with this gang of volunteers who are in there every day packing stuff up to send it out to people who can't get out of the house. It's amazing to see, absolutely amazing to see. You've got people who do all sorts of things on a day-to-day basis who are now getting involved in that effort. We've got some groups in my part of the world. We've got this group called Little Sprouts. They normally do sort of groups for the elderly to go and eat. They help people with cooking. And now they are a food distribution operation. Anita and Cheryl are doing an amazing job begging Sainsbury's for food, but Sainsbury's...
Absolutely right. I personally know people who are volunteering because they're on furlough from whatever job they normally would do. And they're actually, you know, partly probably because they need to maintain their sanity and do something. But they're volunteering to do stuff with the NHS and they're waiting for a call-up to do this, that and the other. So it's a remarkable effort, really.
It's the unsung heroes, isn't it? These people who do these amazing... I mean, We've got a project in mind. I don't think they describe themselves as a food bank, but they are a food. They help people get access to food, vulnerable people. This lady runs the charity, goes to work every day, does her work, comes home, does that on a Saturday morning when we normally, you know, other people might go to the park and do the shopping. She goes around all the supermarkets collecting up the food collection to take back to the food bank. You know, these people just go all out, do the business. And it's impressive. It's very impressive.
Absolutely. And as far as what we're hearing about this sort of virtual parliament idea, we're under the impression there might be something moving on that later on this month. Is that your understanding?
I think so. We would be scheduled to go back on Tuesday coming.
Right.
We're still waiting for confirmation of where what exactly that's going to look like. But I always find these telephone conferences things are a bit odd, actually, aren't they? You've got people checking in and out. When you're here, you get, who's here? Can we check who's on the call? Technology is great, and it's letting us speak to people we might not speak to otherwise and see people we might not see otherwise. But I don't know whether it replaces the real deal, but it's going to have to.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to FaceTime, you know, your relatives far away in different countries, but it's entirely another thing to have maybe 200 MPs all on the same screen. I don't know. I mean, I can't even imagine. I did a house party last night because it was somebody's birthday, and there was.
Well, you're going to have to add me, Mike, if you're on house party.
Well, do you want to have a house party with me? You sure?
Yeah, we'll do house party. It's fantastic.
All right, okay. Well, this was a family thing. So I'm not inviting you to that because nobody would know who you were. They'd be like, who's this bloke? You know. But we had, you know, my son in Dubai, my kids in Sussex, my other daughter who's... my daughter's in Dubai, my son in Los Angeles, and my sister in Connecticut. It was great. But actually, it's one of those things, when you start it, it's kind of mad and everybody's talking at the same time. But we ended up leaving it on for a while and we actually ended up chatting as if we were all sitting in the same room, which was great. But again, I can't see how you could manage that for an actual parliamentary session.
Yeah. We've seen in select committees, haven't we, people checking in and then they'll check what they're wearing and what they're stood in front of. And I think they'll find a solution. I'm confident they will find a solution.
Yes.
And a way to make Parliament operate, scrutinise the government and deliver that safely.
Yes. Now, the one story that seems to be bothering people today, which has come out as a result of a story, I think, in the Mail Online, is that we're being told there's a plane load of people coming in to do some fruit picking in this country from Romania. And a lot of people are going, well, why is that happening? Why haven't we employed local people to do it? The answer, presumably, or the answer that is being given, is that they didn't get enough recruits in this country from the various ranks of the unemployed to do it. But it does seem a bit unusual, given that we are supposedly in lockdown.
I must admit, I've not heard the story, but I've had lots of correspondence, actually, about people talking about people coming into the country.
Yeah.
When people coming into the country, they're usually going into this 14-day isolation. They're out of the way for 14 days, and that's, you know, there are processes in place. People are talking about, you know, there is constraints in place. There are things in place to try to control such situations.
Yes.
But it'd be disappointing if we can't get the people from the UK to do this.
Well, it's a bit
disappointing. I'm sure if we communicate with the right people, they will, because everybody around here working very hard.
I totally get that. But apparently a chartered plane, because the farmers of this country who need the fruit picked, because it's a very time sensitive job. Because if you leave it on sort of growing too long, it goes rotten. They literally need to get people in, and they have to import people in, apparently. And so, you know, they're quite happy about it. But it just seems a bit strange.
Yeah, it's a bizarre. But then again, they wouldn't write about it if unless there was something strange about it, would they, these newspapers? You know?
Yeah, I must admit, I mean, you
in a reasonable manner.
Yeah, I mean, you, like me, might be slightly frustrated at these daily briefings. I mean, I always look forward to the daily briefings because I quite like to get the information that's being given out. But some of the questioning is frankly
pathetic,
just pathetic. Yeah, exactly.
And it's repetitive. It's the same thing over and over and over again, isn't it, all the time?
Mm. Exactly right. So as far as the government's handling of things goes, I mean, it seems to me that they're going to be coming up to the end of this week. They're about to make an announcement, I think, tomorrow on officially how much longer the lockdown goes for. I'm assuming that they will probably say, which is what they said kind of unofficially last week, that it's going to be at least another 3 weeks.
My assumption would be that that's correct. You and I might find this situation very grim because we can't go where we might want to go. Now work's restricted and we can't go to the pub. Actually, the people who are suffering are the people who are on their own trapped out there, isn't it? It's about community solutions to tackle the real problem of, you know, Mrs. Jones around the corner who lives in a bungalow and is trapped on her own. They're the people who have the real consequences of extensions to these things, and they're the people that we we need to get the solutions to, because she doesn't have house party.
Right.
She's 82 and she doesn't have house party.
Yeah, well, I mean, my mother's 96 and we did it for her birthday and she was very confused by the whole,
scenario.
But, you know, but well, she didn't use it. She was sort of on it because she was with my sister. But she couldn't. I mean, there was too many people talking at the same time, so it was a little bit confusing for her.
That is something along the lines of, 35% of those over 70 do not have access to social media? So
no.
They miss all of the information because you don't find out about the local support available unless you go on Facebook.
Right.
Unless, you know, because you're not accessing it now by the council or whatever. You're accessing it via social media. So you're trying to get the things through to those very isolated people who are on their own, who don't have their daughter to be by their side or whatever.
Yes.
And I think that's a big challenge for society. That's a big challenge for us in our community. And I'm impressed by what's happening in my community to try and solve it.
Yeah, absolutely right. And I mean, as far as the next step is concerned, you know, what we're seeing in Spain is them opening up sort of non-essential shops, clothes shops, you know, kind of maybe furniture shops, that kind of thing. Is that do you think that's the way we will go? Or do you see us doing something slightly different?
I think, whatever happens, there is going to be a gradual unlocking. But I think, I mean, you've heard Keir Starmer asking for the exit strategy. You can't talk about the exit strategy until you're through the mess.
Well, I'd like to know what his exit strategy is, because he's not going to be any more successful than Jeremy Corbyn was, I'm afraid.
I think it's too early to tell the exit strategy. I think it will be a gradual unlocking of non-essential shops and things, but to try and get the government to give you a timeline on that, I think it's just mad, isn't it, when these people are trying to get in it.
Well, that's the way it is. Now, Matt, I'm going to let you go because we have a very curious and unusual quirk of the system here where at 12:18 precisely, usually our phone box software cuts you off.
So I was very worried I would be in Builder's Plank of the Week
early
when you were doing all the intros. I was like, is Plank of the Week?
No. But, I mean, you know, you may get there someday. You never know.
As long as,
you know, just don't do anything stupid is my advice to you. Matt, thanks very much indeed. Matt Vickers, a Conservative MP for Stockton South. It is 12:17 and 30 seconds, roughly. So I'm getting out of here. This is Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Ian Collins coming in at 1 o'clock. Dan Wootton back, of course, at 4. And we'll bring you all of the latest news from the government briefing, which goes on around about 5 o'clock every single day. We carry that live here on Talk Radio because we are your information station. We are the people that bring you not only the news, but also a common sense approach to the news. We don't shove things down your throat. We don't tell you that the government's doing terrible, awful things. We actually just get information and we pass it on. We've got opinions. There's nothing wrong with that. And we want to hear your opinions as well. Right now, of course, it's the homeschooling time on this show, because every day after the news at 12:30, we get somebody who is a very fascinating character to talk to us about how it is that they do what they do. We've had Carol Vorderman on talking about maths. We've had a painter and decorator on yesterday talking about how to paint a room. And it's been a fascinating sort of study, really, in just different bits of information that we can learn from. And if you're a parent now, you need to get your kids wrapped around the radio and have a listen to this, because we're going to talk to celebrity chef Barry Vera, because he's going to tell us how to poach an egg. Barry, a very good afternoon to you.
Afternoon, how are you?
I'm very well indeed, Barry. Do you know, I mean, I don't know whether you know, I've started this foodie podcast, which I'm just cooking my own stuff in the kitchen and just doing kind of no-nonsense, very straightforward, here's how to do things, here's how to make mashed potato. I've never actually poached an egg.
No, really?
I've just never done it. I don't know why. I mean, I can't explain why I've never done it, but I've just never done it.
I think people sometimes find it a bit of a fear factor of poaching an egg. They'll scramble, they'll fry, but poaching, it's a bit scary, especially if you just do it, as you're supposed to do it, in a pan of water. I mean, there were my mum had one, you know, one of the old poaching pans where you just crack the eggs into these little cups that sat over some water and you poach them in those. But
right.
Yeah, to do it properly, it can be a bit daunting.
Yes, because, I mean, I quite like eating them, but it tends to be usually when I'm having breakfast in a hotel or something and I'm having kippers, and I'll have kippers with a sort of poached egg, and it's like the kind of thing that I don't really have at home. You know, it's a sort of, it's a bit like sort of Eggs Benedict, you know, you wouldn't make it at home. But so tell us the basics then.
Well, I mean, first off, fresh eggs. Always try and make sure you've got fresh eggs. I know we normally buy eggs each week when we do a shop, but fresh eggs is important. A good big pan of simmering water. Now, not boiling water, because it's going to go all over. So you just, if you look at the water, it's almost just moving, but it's not bubbling away.
Right.
Pinch of salt and a teaspoon of white wine vinegar.
Okay.
Or a white vinegar of sorts.
Right.
Then crack your eggs into a cup or a little dish of sorts, because the idea is if you're cracking it out of the shell straight into the water, it can just splash. It can obviously catch on the eggshell and break the yolk and everything else.
Right.
But as you crack it in, and then the idea is once you've got your however many eggs you want into your cups, is stir the water so you create a little bit of a whirlpool going on in the middle.
Right.
And then drop the egg into the middle of that whirlpool, and what it will do is it starts to spin slowly. It wraps the egg white around the yolk, the yolk.
Okay.
And that's what creates that round effect that that you see when you have it in a restaurant or a hotel.
Okay. So you're pouring it basically out of the cup that you've put it in?
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
So pour it out of the cup into the water that you've stirred. You've created a little bit of a whirlpool. Now, if the water's still spinning, which it should be if you've given it a good spin, you can drop, you know, a couple of eggs in, maybe three eggs, depending on how experienced you might be in poaching an egg.
Yeah.
It is all practice, but do one and then you can take it out and then put another one in. But ideally, you get two eggs in there at that point.
And do you put them both in the middle then, or do you put the second one sort of further out?
No, put both in the middle, because as it drops into the water, it will push it outwards.
Okay.
The spin of the water. So if you drop the other egg in, it will do exactly the same process.
Right.
Now, when we do this in hotels and restaurants, I mean, we've got much bigger pans, and we might have a dozen to 20 eggs going in at a time.
Yes.
And we'll then pull out the ones that, you know, are great. Now, you just leave that cook for about 4 minutes. 4 minutes will give you a nice just... the white cooked on the outside with a soft yolk.
Yes.
The soft yolk. Up to 5 minutes, obviously, for a hard yolk.
Right.
Okay. And then with a slotted spoon, carefully lift the egg out.
Yes.
And just place it onto some kitchen paper to take off all the excess water.
Mm.
And then the trick, obviously, in hotels, you see them perfectly cut. We just trim off the raggedy edges with a knife or a pair of scissors. And then you just place that on your toast, maybe with your, whether you're doing a hollandaise sauce, a drizzle of olive oil, a little bit of sea salt and some pepper.
Mm.
And that's your poached egg ready.
How do you get it from the paper towel to the toast?
You can either just use a dessert spoon, just carefully roll it onto the dessert spoon and lift it off.
Okay.
Or if you're cooking a lot, you get what we call chefy fingers, where you can cope with the heat. You can literally just lift it off and move it over. Another trick that if you've got friends coming over on the weekend, let's say you can have breakfast or a brunch, you can cook the eggs the day before.
Really?
But only cook them for 3 minutes.
Okay.
And it'll be soft, and then you just, same process, put them onto some kitchen paper, just trim the edges, and then just put them into some cold water, and you just keep them in the fridge overnight.
Right.
And then the next morning, again, same process, heat up some water without the vinegar, though, and just slow simmering, and then just with a slotted spoon, just lower the eggs into the slowly simmering water for 1 minute. And then, again, same process, take them out onto some kitchen paper to dry them,
them,
and then put them on.
So you don't put them in a pot that you could reuse in the fridge?
No.
No,
okay. No, you just put them into a container, into a bowl or a Tupperware container, in cold water, and then you just lift them out of that cold water straight into your simmering water the next day, whenever you're going to use them.
All right. And as far as the simmering water goes, and I know you might say this is a very stupid question, but are you talking about boiling water and then simmering it, or do you simmer it and don't let it boil?
No, either or. When it comes to something like this, it doesn't matter. You can bring it up to the boil and then just turn it down so you can just get that effect of it's just rolling. There's no bubbles.
Right.
You can see the water moving around. So either way, whether you want to bring it up to simmer or you boil it and then reduce it to simmer, it's up to you.
Okay. And for those of us who are a bit sort of on the poche side, you know, in Waitrose you can buy those sets of eggs where it starts with a small, like a quail's egg, and then it goes all the way up to a quite large... Yeah. I don't know what the biggest one is, actually. I can't remember if it's an ostrich egg or something.
I think it is
an ostrich egg. Yeah. I mean, I bought one of those once, and it was quite a weird experience. But, I mean, presumably you can poach any kind of egg, right?
You can. I've never poached an ostrich egg. I've scrambled ostrich eggs.
Okay.
But you can poach any egg you want. I mean, we've poached quail's eggs, you know, to go with canapes in hotels and restaurants I've run before. It's entirely up to you, really. Everything that you can do with any egg, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant of the size. You've just got to... look at that. But maybe that's a challenge. Maybe I have to get an ostrich egg one day and poach that.
Maybe you should, yeah. Well, I've got an opportunity to ask you. You're probably going to now sort of shoot me down in flames, because I've done today, just on a Wednesday, I try and put out something basic that people probably know what to do. Last week I did mashed potatoes. This week I did scrambled eggs. And I said I put a bit of milk in it. And people are like, yeah, I put milk in scrambled eggs. You can't do that. You're going to tell me they're right, aren't you?
Well, actually, I grew up, I'm a Yorkshire lad, so, you know, my mum always put milk in
scrambled eggs.
And I do. Now, in restaurants, obviously, we will use cream and butter, obviously, to make it quite rich.
Yes.
But, yeah, there's nothing wrong with putting milk in. Yeah,
thank you.
It stops it from going so dry as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I do it. And also, it gives it a little, it goes a little bit further, if you know what I mean.
It does, no, absolutely, yeah. It stretches it, you know, if you've got a couple of eggs, it does that a little bit further. And it just calms the cooking process down as well, because it's like, as I say, waiting for the water to boil. You know, you're stirring it. It doesn't do anything. You walk away for a minute, come back, it's all overcooked.
Yeah, exactly. Sod's law, as they say. Brilliant. Barry, thank you so much for helping us out there. Barry Vera, celebrity chef there, former hotel chef as well. A man who has given me his seal of approval. Yes, you do put milk in scrambled eggs. There are all you numpties out there on MG's Kitchen telling me not to put milk in it. I've just been told I can. So there, this is Talk Radio.
Talk Radio, across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham, on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 till 1, Monday to Friday, on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.